So, good afternoon, everyone. I think it's still good morning. Okay. So, pleasure to be here. I am the director of the network. I have no. Sorry. Doesn't move, huh? I have to move. So, I have no financial conflicts to disclose. And what I'm going to do is first go through a bunch of slides that introduce you to the network, tell you what it is, and then follow that with examples of the work we do. I think it's good to understand what the network is before I launch into what we do. So in 2010, Robert Wood Johnson established the Network for Public Health Law to do several things. Build connections between public health lawyers. Let's say, I'm going to use the short term public health lawyers, but I totally agree with Maris. It's for lawyers with public health clients and practitioners. We want to build the field of public health law, and we want to provide technical assistance to public health lawyers and practitioners at no cost. I will repeat, Robert Wood Johnson funded at no cost. So we have five regional offices. They're depicted in various colors here, and they all provide technical assistance. I've left some bookmarks in the back of the room that can tell you more. So we focus on the use of law to advance public health. It's a common theme here. Building a community of public health lawyers, all levels of government, private, nonprofit, advocates. And a key part of the network's mission is connecting public health experts both with each other and with practitioners. And this is a wonderful synergy to advance public health. This slide depicts the five geographic regions. They're located at schools of law across the country and or schools of public health. The coordinating center, the hub, is co-located in St. Paul, Minnesota with our northern region. And also we're affiliated with the Center for Public Health Law, which handles technical legal assistance on tobacco issues, as well as, at this point, some nutrition issues as well. And the southeastern region also works with the National Health Law Program called NHELP, which focuses on using law to protect the health rights of low-income and underserved populations. So here are some areas covered by the network. You can see that there is a very, very broad list, and this is not exhaustive, and it shouldn't be surprising since, as you know, the field of public health is incredibly diverse, and so the field of public health law is equally diverse. Here's a slide that shows areas of expertise. Each region is shown along with the name of the regional director and the region's area of expertise. Each region is really able to answer the majority of requests received. But each region also has several areas of expertise. So when another region has in-depth expertise in the topic you're interested in, that region's expertise will be available to you as well. So the body of public health law and legal tools is growing. And what the network's able to do from the technical assistance provided, the network can recognize the needs and trending issues for public health law. So we develop resources, legal tools, and relevant training opportunities. The network's website, it's certainly worth a click onto that. It's a treasure trove of public health law resources and ways to connect on issues of public health law. So technical legal assistance at no charge, what is it? Network lawyers will be able to share what the legal issues and options are with the problem you've brought in, what other jurisdictions have done. They might be roping in some of the other experts here to help you. It truly is a network. And so we would provide you with network resources and put you in touch with other experts. There is a difference between technical legal assistance and legal advice. There is no attorney-client relationship here. We have five regions, so each lawyer, the lawyers serving each region, have not passed the bar in all of the 8 to 10 states that they're covering, and so they're careful to provide you with the options and to stop at that line when it might be that they will be able to brief and give your attorneys that you work with the grounding, the knowledge, the confidence to go forward. So here's just a list of resources, training, tools. issue briefs, 50 fact sheets, webinars, model laws, blogs on current topics, as well as updates, alerts, and training. So who's in the network? Members of the network are called joiners. They're close to 5,000 at this point, and the network's joiners include lawyers, practitioners, public health officials, policymakers, and advocates. So joining is really, really easy through the website. It simply requires your name, contact information. You are not bombarded with network emails. I know there's social media on it. I'm still learning myself, but you have to sign up for that. If you sign up to be a joiner, you get a biweekly newsletter only, something that you can glance at or dive into if you see something there that really interests you. So you will see discussions of the latest issues, cases, related resources on current public health law issues, and you'll see fast links to either resources that the network has or outside the network. So we're getting close to what, specifics of what we've worked on. This slide shows a snapshot of the kinds of issues addressed by the network in response to technical assistance requests. So currently, as you can see, the greatest number of requests received are on substance abuse, emergency legal preparedness, and health reform. So here we go with the next slides to show you some of the work that's being done. And you'll hear echoes from my fellow panelists here on these topics. So local public health authorities have contacted the network concerning some current challenges, very real challenges being faced by local and state boards of public health. There have been recent court decisions that have struck down the 16-ounce sugary drink. It's called the portion cap law in New York City. Those regulations, as well as tobacco control regulations in Bullitt County, Kentucky. Some of the issues there are not just that those particular regulations were struck down, but the reasoning that the court used and how it could be precedent, as you've heard, for other cases and limitations on authority. In addition, there's a challenge going on right now to New York school vaccination requirements and exclusion requirements. That challenge was unsuccessful in the lower courts, but is currently being appealed. Interesting questions have come up concerning a trend with respect to preemption legislation. So on this slide, there are a few examples of recent legislation passed to prevent different or stricter or any regulation by state or local governments and health authorities. Fast food toy giveaways in Arizona, nutritional information on menus in Alabama, nutritional content and marketing of foods in hotels and restaurants in Florida. Guidance has also been requested by local boards of health, and that includes questions on the topics of hoarding. How have other jurisdictions dealt with this? How have they intervened? Social host ordinances, which establish liability for serving alcohol in certain circumstances, and regionalization, mergers of health departments. The network worked on the New Hampshire Health Officers with the New Hampshire Health Officers Association and New Hampshire Division of Public Health Services, for example, to create a public nuisance document for local health officers. And the document addresses a wide range of legal issues related to public nuisance, including authority to enact ordinances, abatement of nuisances, procedures for recovering abatement costs, and sample ordinances. Ebola. The network has received, as you can imagine, numerous requests concerning the legal tools to address Ebola. And with CDC colleagues in the public health law program, the network presented a webinar on Ebola. I think we had 1,200 plus participants on that webinar and continued the questions and answers afterwards on the web. So the resources on the website right now include a continuously updated primer. It's a pretty, I think, wonderful, continuously, as I said, updated, sometimes it's twice a day, set of slides that walk you through the facts, what has happened, the federal authority, what the states have done. It's really very good. And it also has links to other places where you want to delve deeper. We've done some work on the ACA requirement for hospitals to conduct community health needs assessments. And judging from the audience here, it sounds like many of you might be interested in that. And a study was done in our southeast region on the North Carolina hospitals, and it was really pretty good news. They found that the process is working. It's fostering a lot of collaboration in addressing health needs of communities. And I think this study can serve as a resource for other states evaluating their progress on this. Maris covered some of the work the network has been doing on opioid overdose. We've been very active on the topic of the use of naloxone to prevent overdose and the legal tools available the legal tools to make it available. And the work has really served as a great resource for local and health policymakers. We've completed a comprehensive analysis of state laws in the area, and we're invited to share this work with the Office of National Drug Control Policy, the USAG's office, and the DEA. Prescription drug monitoring programs have been recognized as another way to prevent drug abuse and overdose, and resources were developed on the variations in these PMP programs, and a webinar again was presented on this topic. And these webinars are kept online so that you can go back and click on them if you've missed them, if you have an interest. Again, Maris, right on point. Health informatics and collection and use of data is a complex and very, very active area of public health law involving the balance of privacy protections and public health goals. Before taking this job 7 months ago, I was, for decades, the general counsel of the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and during that time saw the establishment and growth of an Office of Privacy and Data Access staff building to just deal with the issues in Massachusetts, a relatively small state. So the Mid-States region has been involved with this. They've done a toolkit for ASVO, a directory and listserv for privacy officers, webinar and training with the CDC on HIPAA and public health data. So many jurisdictions are looking at setting up immunization information systems, and network attorneys were asked to analyze the law and practice in Minnesota, and they focused specifically on that state's opt-out consent model for these systems. Another legal question that public health practitioners are facing on immunization is how can states share this data? There are some learning now, spending some time in Minnesota. I think it's in South Dakota, wherever fracking is happening. There are these, they're calling them man camps. People are flocking to work there, and there's no infrastructure, and there's no housing, and there's no sanitation, and guess what? There's no record of immunization for these people. It doesn't come with them. They don't know what they've been immunized for. So this is becoming, across the states, not just for these camps, but a big issue. So we've worked with the Partnership for Public Health Law to ask the network for guidance on these issues. And we looked at them and also provided an approach that's sort of like a template you can go to facilitate your own legal analysis and address the legal issues involved. In the area of injury prevention, an academic center in New Mexico contacted the network concerning the current law on motorcycle helmets. Policymakers there are thinking about a proposal to charge a higher registration fee for those who choose to ride without helmets, without protection. And the funds would be used for trauma care and to make free helmets available to those who will use them. So the network provided information on current law and also on the legislative process. Food Safety Modernization Act, Eastern Region has analyzed the proposed regulations for the implementation of this act and provided some primers on the website for state and local governments on the various provisions and requirements of this act. So 5 primers are done, they're on this slide, and 5 primers will be coming soon. So recently, the network focused on access to oral health, which has a significant impact on overall health, as we know. Network's attorneys have conducted a comprehensive exploration of the legal issues. They've highlighted obstacles and opportunities for expanding access to oral health. And And there's an oral health science and law brief on the website, along with a 50-state fact sheet on the scope of practice of dental professionals. So, I'm closing by saying I hope you will contact us to help you answer any questions about the use of law, to further your work and share existing resources and connections with others who can assist you. And I'm going to leave you with, this is just a screenshot of the website, and there should be some bookmarks with some information in the back of the room. Thank you so much.
Thank you.